Welcome to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational conversations about movies. Double Take is a Cinema Classics production hosted by myself, Johnny DiLoretto, and John DeSando. I'm Johnny DiLoretto.
I'm John DeSando.
This is Double Take.
Right.
We're talking about Christopher Nolan.
Oh, only one word for you on that.
What?
Tenet.
Tenet. Tenet is not out yet.
I know.
The release date keeps getting pushed back. Worried now. I'm getting worried about whether or not we're ever going to see movies in theaters again.
I know we're not seeing them in this month or next month.
But here's the deal. When movie theaters do open back up, man, is this going to be exciting? I think it's so great that we're waiting on a Christopher Nolan movie to do this. Because for movie nerds the world over, Christopher Nolan is an event director. It's a big deal when one of these movies come out.
And he is not, although he's compared to Steven Spielberg, he is not Steven Spielberg.
Okay, so Spielberg is like that big, like populist director.
Yes.
He makes these movies that make us feel good, that sometimes challenge us, just stylistically, so influential. But we know when we're seeing a Spielberg movie, we also know when we're seeing a Christopher Nolan movie. They're two very different animals.
And I'll tell you one of the things I think is a big difference.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg is a child. He has the affections of a child. He has the inclinations of a child. He has a wondrous look at the world that Christopher Nolan, as far as I'm concerned, does not have. Christopher Nolan has a much darker view of the world, which makes it. That's why I think Spielberg is always going to make more money than Nolan, because he taps into the popular culture in a way that attracts people.
And I have to disagree with you.
Oh, dear.
Because I don't think that Spielberg's movies in the last 10, 15 years do make as much money as Christopher Nolan movies. Christopher Nolan has pretty much taken over that mantle as the guy who makes these blockbusters, blockbusters that make $500 million to $1 billion worldwide. He does this without having those brand names, right? He's not doing, well, he did, I guess that's not true. He did with Batman.
Yeah.
But Inception, a remarkable achievement, given that it's not based on anything. It's an original work. People still talk about it to this day.
Sure.
And I think that's what Tenet is going to be, right? Sort of like...
Yeah. It's much more cerebral. It's going to be a spy movie, more James Bond-like. But at the same time, he's going to be doing his usual tricks, Nolan, with time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to make it more interesting to the upper level of the viewer. Now, I still think for our audience, Spielberg has much more of a warm reception, that they're going to see it. Granted, you're right. His last films have not been so. But when you look at all of the others, E.T., every one of them, Jaws, these are solid audience pleasers.
Yeah.
I just don't think Nolan is an audience pleaser.
You know what? That's great. He's an audience challenger.
Exactly.
And I think Hollywood still has yet to learn that lesson, is that by challenging audiences, you can make all this money, right?
Yes.
And they seem never to learn that lesson. Like, when he made The Dark Knight, brought Batman down to earth, set it in a world that looked a lot like ours, all these complicated themes. I was thinking, wow, okay, now Hollywood is going to start, they're going to learn the lesson, right? And the lesson is audiences will respond to challenging movies. That's not the lesson they learned. The lesson they learned was, let's let Christopher Nolan do whatever he wants.
Sure.
And that paid off with Inception.
Yes.
But we didn't really see the change there industry-wide.
One of the attractive features of Nolan is that he brings an audience in. It's not the same audience that Spielberg has. He brings in people who recommend to other people to see this movie. Your example of Inception is really the best one. As far as I'm concerned, the one that most crystallizes my feeling about Christopher Nolan.
Mm-hmm.
He's intellectually challenging, let's say.
Okay.
And he's also exciting. He also has that sci-fi heart to him that makes you attracted to it. But he is going to challenge you.
Okay. So let me ask you. I want your first double take on this. Tell me the two most disparate Christopher Nolan movies.
The Prestige on one end.
Mm-hmm.
And then take Memento on the other.
Okay. You think those are his two most different movies?
Well, I would say they are two very different movies, because Prestige to me is his most showcase movie.
All right.
You have two great stars in there, but I don't find the depth that I do find in Memento knocked me out first time I saw it, mm-hmm. and is still maybe the one I think of when I think of Nolan.
Interesting.
How about you?
For me, it would be Dunkirk and Insomnia.
Good one.
Neither one of which I'm crazy about. So Insomnia, if you remember, that was a remake of a Norwegian film, I think, about the detective who has to yes. conduct this investigation in a place that's like daylight all the time.
The centerpiece is Al Pacino.
Yeah, Al Pacino doing, you know, some late era Pacino, some decent work there.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, this is not Pacino in Heat. This is Pacino who can't sleep.
I know.
So he's a little agitated. The big sort of flaw in that movie is Robin Williams. I feel like Robin Williams is miscast, doing something that, I don't know, it's like this playful cat and mouse thing. It doesn't work to me.
Well, my double take on that
yeah.
is that this is the one time I can accept him reversing his usual image by going serious. Otherwise, I usually just don't like the attempt of essentially a comedian
yeah.
Changing into a more serious. So for this one is the only one that works for me.
Okay.
I think he is insidious. I think he's memorable. Williams, I think he's creepy. And because we probably don't even see him for the first hour.
No, you hear him on the phone.
I know you hear him on the phone, yeah.
I just don't like him. I don't buy him as a menace.
I know, I got you. Know? You. And for anything else, I'm with you all the way.
Okay.
This, yeah.
And as far as Dunkirk goes, I know a lot of people, you liked that movie, did you not?
I liked it.
Yeah.
But it's not one I would say to you, hey, see Nolan's Dunkirk.
Right. And yeah. I'm not sure when I think about that why, you know, his little playing with the narrative, jumping back and forth in the historical timeline works. But I would say that those two movies, you know, this war movie, his take on the war movie, on the classic World War II genre, and then his take on, you know, remaking a Norwegian film. I think those represent two very different flawed aspects of his career.
But not bad movie. I mean, I think Dunkirk is a very fine movie in its historical perspective.
Yeah.
Plus his visual perspective. Wide shots that give you the feeling of the doom of Great Britain. And
yeah.
I think he does a great job with it, but it has not anywhere near the complexity of almost every other one of his movies.
Right. I got you. Okay. So let's do a pivot here. We talked about Christopher Nolan movies that are the opposite of each other. What about filmmakers? Who for you represents a sort of just monolithically different type of filmmaking and different style? Who's his opposite?
You know, I would have to say that Quentin Tarantino is the opposite of him.
Okay.
I think Tarantino is interested in capturing the zeitgeist of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is interested in eccentric characters.
You think Tarantino is interested in catching the zeitgeist of the time?
Yeah, I do.
Really? And
yeah.
not the zeitgeist of a previous time?
Well, that's a good point. I don't know. Why not the previous?
I
yeah.
don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
No,
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you for doing that. I meant of a previous time. That's exactly that time.
Yeah.
And I'm coming off of our conversation on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which we did a great job on, I thought, in deconstructing.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. He captures a previous time. I don't know what on Pulp Fiction, whether I can even say that with Tarantino. I think he's capturing a mode, a way of showing an underworld that might have been contemporary, but one that we hadn't seen before.
You're listening to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational conversations about movies, a cinema classics production. When I think about Tarantino and Nolan, I don't think they're all that different.
Okay.
In some ways.
Okay.
They both are these old school directors that like to shoot on film. They don't like to rely on special effects or CGI anyway, mm-hmm. in Nolan's mm-hmm. case. Two guys who definitely know where to put that camera. They're thinking strategically about how they're going to tell their story with the camera, shot by shot by shot. So in some ways, I think they're akin to each other in the way they approach storytelling through the camera. A guy that I would think is the opposite of Nolan.
I know what you're going to say.
is Wes Anderson.
Yes, of course.
Right? A sort of precious kind of production value. These movies look completely different.
So what do you think of when you think of Wes Anderson?
You know, here's someone who knows what they're doing with the camera, someone who knows how to block action. Wes Anderson is after something completely different. you know, I guess I'd have to think about what Nolan is after, really, as a filmmaker, as a storyteller.
You're making me think a difference is in their character. Nolan is much more serious about his characters. When you take something like Wes Anderson does, like some eccentric hotel, when you take a Bill Murray type of character who's just comes on the set eccentric, he almost sometimes overdoes it with his cute characters. Whereas I don't see Nolan at all interested in making any of his characters cute.
Yeah, no, he's not. You know, one of the things that I think Wes Anderson does, though, I think he gets sort of short shrift, right? Because people think, oh, he's precious.
Right.
He's that's doing
right.
this, that's like, ironic doing. Thing.
Yes, you're right.
And,
that's right.
And I got to tell you, like, I think that's all smoke and mirrors. I think under a lot of Wes Anderson's work is a deeply feeling humanist. I think there's a lot of heart in his movies. The Royal Tenenbaums, right? There's all this stuff happening. It looks, okay, this is funny. There's all this comedy happening. But really, it's about a man trying to reconnect with his family. He's filled with regret. That whole bit with Luke Wilson's character attempting suicide is very powerfully done. And at the end, when Ben Stiller tells Gene Hackman, "I've had a rough year, Dad," all the emotion that has been playing through that movie comes through in that line. It's one of the most emotionally powerful moments in recent movie memory in the last 20 years or so. Same thing with Fantastic Mr. Fox. As silly and as beautifully comic as that movie is, there's an emotion under
Maybe
it.
Maybe one of the greatest animations ever.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways, Wes Anderson is, as a filmmaker, much more in tune with his emotional self than Nolan. He's almost like Kubrickian in a lot of ways.
One that comes to my mind is the Grand Budapest Hotel, which I think is a great showpiece for him. When you're talking about my thesis is that he's mostly interested in the eccentricities of his fellow human beings.
Yeah, for sure.
But Wes Anderson is interested in plumbing the depths of humanity, getting to understand why we're as goofy as we are. And he does a great job of it. It's just that it's completely opposite. It seems to me, from I can't find anything in Nolan's oeuvre that makes me laugh at all.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Yeah, it's a pretty humorless filmography.
It's a very grim world.
Yeah, and yet, you know, every once in a while, like a little humor comes through, like in the Dark Knight when, you know, he has all the Batman imitators out there, and the guy's like, "What's so different about us?" And he says, "I'm not wearing hockey pants." Every once in a while, a little, you know, he cracks a smile. But you're right. For the most part, Nolan is like this cold, you know, it has this surface sheen on it.
Yeah.
And yet he managed to get at deeper stuff somehow, but in a totally different way than Wes Anderson.
I have a question. What's your feeling about Interstellar?
You know, I got to tell you that I have a confession to make.
Uh-oh, no.
I have not seen...
Damn.
There are two Nolan films I have not seen.
Oh.
I haven't seen his first film, Following.
No, I have not either.
Okay.
No, okay.
And I missed Interstellar along the way.
Okay. Because I think it's worth looking at because it's completely different. Obviously, it's science fiction. Mm-hmm. Not that he doesn't have science fiction, but it's set in a time when we are trying to make a better world by going into a different world.
Yeah.
And so you have Matthew McConaughey traveling and leaving his family and leaving his daughter, making a big, big sacrifice to find a new world. He does a great job in doing that, but it's so different.
Is this his most humane film? His most emotionally feeling film? A father leaving his family.
Absolutely. Awful lot of interaction between him and his daughter that's poignant and actually sorrowful when you consider the sacrifice that an astronaut has to make to go and never come back. But he's also looking for his father.
Okay.
You know, so there are themes in here that Nolan has had before, but nothing ever as concentrated as this. Nothing as poignant, nothing as deep feeling as Interstellar, and yet I don't think anybody would offer this up as one of his best films.
One last pirouette here before we wrap up our first podcast. Fathers in space, sons in space,
oh my God.
Father sons in space. What is a better father in space movie, Interstellar or Ad Astra?
Oh my gosh, Ed Astra is off the charts for that. Astra is just overwhelmingly son-father deal. I think Interstellar does a much better job of covering other areas. That's a great point, because I was just thinking about Ad Astra. I'm going crazy thinking about.
Well, you know, Ad Astra with Brad Pitt seems fundamentally flawed in its inception. I mean, if Tommy Lee Jones is out in space on the other side of Neptune, aren't you just happy?
Don't go there.
Right. I'm not going after Tommy Lee Jones. Leave him out there. You know that's going to be bad news.
That's right. It is. Oh.
It's not like he's going to be happy to see you. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that's Double Take.
Yeah.
We're waiting for Christopher Nolan, his new film, to be released in theaters. Here's hoping we can get past this pandemic and we can all see great movies on the big screen again.
Mm-hmm.
And also, hey, look. Double Take needs a sponsor. We need somebody to underwrite our critical conversations.
I would think about
films. So if you're interested in supporting this endeavor, please reach out to me at johnnyd@wcbe.org. That's johnnyd@wcbe.org. And that's it for Double Take.